In other news.
To determine why and how the towers collapsed.
Kind of scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. In the last decade, the suppression of medical breakthroughs aided by the pharmaceutical industry has been widely exposed, yet government approval of drugs continue to be based on test results provided by the drug manufacturers. Lack of independent study, orthodox medical professions, high-salaried executives, and government managers in health agencies have prevented the integration of truly great scientific leaps in medicine. A prominent example of how American society has been shorted by a morally and scientifically corrupt healthcare system is the institutional opposition to the medical genius of Royal Raymond Rife. Dr. Royal Rife was born in 1888. He studied at John Hopkins University and developed technology in the field of optics, electronics, radiochemistry, biochemistry, ballistics, and aviation. In the 1930s, Royal Raymond Rife perfected his invention of the universal microscope. The Rife universal microscope had nearly 6,000 different parts and was capable of magnifying objects up to 60,000 times their normal size. It's a device that broke the, quote, vision barrier by allowing humans to view live microbes the size of a virus. Rife was lauded for this enormous scientific achievement. Aside from this invention threatening powerful interests, Rife was also able to use vibrational medicine to cure cancer by killing live pathogens with frequency. The potential for medical science to advance about a century with one invention was quietly smothered by an organized campaign launched against Rife's reputation. Our guest Barry Lines asks, will Royal Rife's scientific and medical discoveries ever be honestly tested and then, once confirmed, be widely integrated into everyday medical practice in order to improve everyone's health? Or will special interests keep Rife's science and health advances censored and the public restricted to less effective, more expensive therapies? Barry Lines is the author of many books, including The Cancer Cure That Worked, 50 Years of Suppression, The Healing of Cancer, The Cures, The Cover-Ups, and The Solution Now. The Cancer Conspiracy, Rife's Great Discovery, Why, quote, Resonant Frequency Therapy is Kept Hidden from Public Awareness, and Rife's World of Electromedicine. He's worked for decades to reveal the misconduct, cover-up, and suppression of the cure for cancer. Barry has a BA from Boston University in English Literature. He was also trained in academic rigor when investigating complex subjects requiring evidence and documentation of historic subjects. We talk about the tragic censorship and criminal elements behind the suppression of Royal Rife's inventions. Barry, welcome to Another News.
Thank you. I'm ready to tell you about a great scientist.
Barry, a real revolution in the United States healthcare industry nearly took off in the 1930s, but there were invisible barriers. You detailed this in the book, The Cancer Cure That Worked, 50 Years of Suppression. This is an important part of the Rife story. Would you please give listeners a profile on Royal Rife and, if possible, a brief timeline on what happened after he went public with the universal microscope?
Royal Rife was an inventor of microscopes and also a bacteriologist who studied diseases that are caused by viruses and bacteria. And in early 1930s, he invented super microscopes like the world has never seen. And these microscopes enabled him, for the first time, to see a living virus. This had never been done before, and it wasn't until much later that when the electron microscope came along that seeing viruses became familiar. But the electron microscope kills their specimens. So Rife was the only person who could actually see viruses and study their behavior and how they cause diseases. All this work was done basically in the 1930s, and it ended in 1939 when the American Medical Association basically tried to take over his work. And there was a court battle, and Rife won, but he was basically destroyed by the legal actions against him. So he was a renowned scientist in the 1930s. He was written up by the many newspapers and medical journals, and then all of a sudden his work was suppressed. He was written up in magazines such as Popular Science in 1928, 1929, but it wasn't until late November of 1931 that he made a major discovery with other scientists, and it was announced in the press, and he was written up in the New York Times and the LA Times, and suddenly became prominent in the public sphere because he had isolated a virus, and he was able to show photographs of the virus, and soon he became a phenomenon, addressing 250 scientists at a time in conference rooms in Los Angeles and places like that. And by 1934, he was the lead scientist in an experimental clinical trial sponsored by the University of Southern California, in which terminal cancer and tuberculosis patients were treated with electronic medicine as opposed to chemical medicine. And all of those patients were cured. So by the late 1930s, he was often in newspapers, and people were wondering what the next thing he was going to discover would be. And that's when the AMA tried to steal everything he had and basically went into doctors' offices and confiscated the instruments because they were curing too many people.
And you mentioned in a past conversation, he actually built 5 microscopes back in 1933. I don't think many people know that there were prototypes to the universal microscope. Can you talk about that?
He built 5 microscopes. The first ones were built in the early 20s. And then the second major one came in about 1931. And then the third microscope, which was the most famous, called the universal, was built in 1933 and put on display at the in San Diego for the public to see. And that microscope was written up by newspapers all across the country, including the Boston Globe and the Christian Science Monitor in Boston. And it was the talk of the scientific community. You had scientists coming from all across America to look at it and to meet this famous new scientist who was on the frontiers of medicine, basically, and science. He was the first one that could actually see viruses as they moved around, and he could distinguish the different viruses that caused different diseases. So he was obviously a super celebrity within the scientific world, and he made great discoveries that could have changed the direction of medicine if his work hadn't been suppressed by the American Medical Association.
And that was around 1938, 1939, the beginning of World War II. And you were pointing out that's when the AMA tried to buy Beam Ray Corporation. Can you tell listeners about the Beam Ray Corporation and the lawsuit that was filed against it?
Beam Ray was a company that Wright formed with other people to build frequency instruments that treated people through the use of frequency to destroy viruses and bacteria through electronics as opposed to chemicals. And the AMA wanted to buy into the corporation, so they made him an offer, and he and his partners refused the offer. So the AMA initiated a lawsuit to gain control of the company. And that lawsuit took place in 1939. World War II began in September of 39. So you have this convergence of a great scientific event occurring at the same time that the Second World War was. So in a sense, his work was easily suppressed because everyone was focused on the battle in Europe and Japan.
And at this point, Royal Rife was not completely on his own. He did have a certain amount of support by other institutions. Can you talk about that, please?
he was working with some of the top recognized scientists in America in the field of bacteriology or microbiology. He was working with Dr. Rosano, who was head of the bacteriology department at the Mayo Clinic. He was working with Dr. Kendall, who was considered America's answer to Pasteur. He was from Northwestern in Chicago. And they were traveling to San Diego to meet with Rife and work with him. You had one of the top Canadian cancer experts from Montreal who worked closely with him. And this was the cream of the crop. And they were seeing the microorganisms that caused these terrible diseases in that microscope, and they were experimenting with frequencies to destroy those viruses and heal the patients. And it worked. It was a revolutionary event in medicine that, if things had gone differently, would have been recognized as something analogous to the invention of electricity with Tesla, or maybe the Wright brothers airplane. And now, so many years later, 80 years or so ago, we would be far ahead of where we are today. But we're not.
I would imagine with that group, he was trailblazing and quite formidable to opponents. Despite the ruthless marginalization of Rife's treatment, physicians were using Rife's instruments in their practice. Can you talk about how the American Medical Association was involved in subverting those who were interested in using Rife's technology?
Well, one doctor in San Diego was treating 40 patients a day. He had two technicians working for him, and they were developing all these case histories of curing a variety of diseases. And after the AMA lost its attempt to steal these discoveries, the AMA in Chicago, where their headquarters is, ordered that all the instruments would be confiscated. And AMA and local medical societies sent musclemen into these doctors' offices and threatened them with jail and took their instruments, confiscated them. And there was very few of them that survived the raids from the AMA in 1939, 1940, 1941, because the doctors were terrified of what was happening to them. It's not in the history books, but it is factual, and the documents do exist that show it. So it's a dark side of medical history in America.
Yes, that's putting it lightly. Barry Lines, you spoke with a witness who was actually there when some of the AMA goons were stealing Rife's instruments out of the doctor's office. Can you talk about that, please?
Yes, I interviewed one of the technicians that worked for this doctor. His name was Hammer, Dr. Hammer. He was treating 40 patients a day he had two Rife instruments. And after the AMA lost its case to steal the rights to the invention, they sent in goons who broke open the door and came in and pushed the doctor against the wall and threatened him and told him that he would give up his instruments to them, or they would take away his medical license and have him jailed. And he surrendered, basically, and he gave them the instruments, and they were never seen again. Dr. Hammer eventually, after that experience, decided to close his medical facility there in San Diego and moved away to another town. He continued practicing medicine, but he never had anything to do with Rife again. And that was basically the procedure that they used to end the development of the frequency instruments in the 1930s. In 1944, the Smithsonian Institute finally published an article about Wright's great microscope and what it could do. And it also published the fact that he was curing diseases by destroying the viruses that caused the diseases using frequencies. And what he would do is set up a resonance factor where the vibration of the natural vibration of the given virus would be intensified until it exploded. And then the body would simply get rid of the debris in the following days, and that's how the healing took place.
That's great on the Smithsonian, but a little too late, I would say. Where were they when Reif and the other doctors needed support of an institution like that? So a lot of horrible things were going on in the late 1930s, including the leading laboratory for electronic or energy medicine that was located in Alpine, New Jersey, Burnett Labs. Can you talk about Burnett Labs and what happened to this laboratory?
Well, most people don't realize that in the 1930s, there were hundreds, if not thousands, of people who were doctors who were experimenting with various kinds of electronic instruments. And Dr. Burnett had a laboratory. He was a very wealthy doctor in New Jersey, just across from New York City there. And he had the top electronics laboratory in the country, and he was verifying Reif's discoveries. He used to brag that he didn't have a single nail in his entire laboratory, that everything was anything that could interfere with his electronic research was not as part of the laboratory. But in March of 1939, he and his wife went to California to visit Reif. He was verifying Dr. Reif's research. And while he was in California in March of 1939, his laboratory at 3 a.m. in the morning had a mysterious fire and was totally destroyed. That was the same year that the AMA had started its lawsuit against Reif. So there's deep suspicion that the same people were basically causing the laboratory to be destroyed that were also trying to stop Reif's instruments from being further developed.
In your research, you point out there was a time when the press was actually marveling at Reif's work. You quote Dr. Jeff Sutherland, a professor of medicine at the University of Colorado who was qualified to conduct federal cancer studies, quote, "Frequency therapy properly applied may well replace every other modality. Frequency devices can change the medical paradigm as we know it, but unfortunately, there is considerable resistance to electromedicine." Can you talk about that and how today the American public continues to be denied the history of Reif's work and frequency medicine?
That quote by Dr. Sutherland was in the Reif Handbook, which is written by Dr. Nina Silver. And basically he was saying that there's a potential revolution in frequency medicine, not only in America, but in Germany and Russia and lots of other places, but that in America there's a monopoly medicine which is basically blocking the development. And that, of course, is why so many people in America are unhappy with their health care. They want more options.
It must be really odd for you, Barry, to look at where we are today and how the American public would really benefit from a paradigm shift toward frequency medicine. It's not even in any textbooks. What are your thoughts on that?
Lots of people know about Reif because there have been books and articles and a lot of research by engineers since the late 1980s to revive his work. And there's also the fact that the Russians were working with energy medicine since the 1980s on their own based on the work of Nikola Tesla. And after the Berlin Wall fell, the East Germans gave the West Germans all of the Russian frequency medicine stuff. And the West Germans have been flooding the world with frequency instruments, so you can go to any country and you'll find people experimenting with this stuff, both in universities, studying the effect of frequencies on living tissue, and also individual practitioners, be they doctors or chiropractors, who are using it in this stage of its development. But the sad point is that we could have had it back in the 1930s and 40s, and the revival didn't start until really the early 1990s. So we've lost decades and decades, and we could have had a choice in medicine, not just drug medicine, but natural medicine and energy medicine as well. But that's politics.
Yeah, it is quite amazing how this type of work in general can be silenced for decades, omitted from the public domain. It's very bizarre.
You have to understand that your television and your mainstream media, newspapers, do not touch this topic. So the only place you're going to find it is on the internet. And even there you have the beginnings of censorship with Facebook and Google, and that's in the news all the time. So there's a definite attempt by what we can call conventional medicine or establishment medicine to keep things in a status quo and not allow in these alternatives. But the more people use the alternatives and seek them out, then we have a process of evolution that will take place. It's difficult, but it's definitely something that is slowly being recognized as valid.
Rife cataloged and charted the frequencies of specific viruses, bacteria, and pathogens. He knew the resonant frequencies of viruses which would kill them. Can you talk more about the Rife universal microscope and what would cause a microorganism to fluoresce?
Until 1930s and until Rife came along, there was a barrier that prevented an optical microscope from being able to view viruses. In other words, there was a limitation. Rife used a technique called fluorescence to go beyond, break the barrier, so to speak, and enable the virus to light itself. It's called fluorescence. It's a technical term. It simply means that the object you're studying, the specimen, will light itself. What Rife did is he used a frequency of light that matched the natural vibration of the virus that he was studying, enabling it to give off a specific color. Now, it's interesting because he broke this barrier in the early 1930s, but traditional science did not recognize that this could be done until they awarded a Nobel Prize in 2014 to three scientists who did the exact same thing. They used fluorescence to break the same barrier. So it just shows how wrong scientific history can be, in that Rife got no recognition for what he did 80 years before three scientists in modern times won a Nobel Prize for doing the same thing.
It is astonishing that celebration to end all disease. And you would think that that would be a significant milestone in history to reflect back on when anyone is doubting Rife's work. You have this room full of renowned physicians celebrating the work of Rife.
Late 1931, 32, Rife was in all the newspapers, even the New York Times and Boston's Christian Science Monitor. People were talking about him. And then in 1933, when the big microscope, the most famous one, was invented and put on display, you had the Associated Press writing news articles, and he was well known. He was a superstar in the scientific world. But politics and rivalry, competition, interfered with what could have been. Time went on, wars came, it all got lost.
Well, you mentioned this earlier, but while the suppression kept Rife's revolutionary medical breakthroughs and cancer cures quiet, there were scientists in other countries taking an interest in his bioenergetic work. Can you please talk about that development.
You had scientists, certainly, in Wright's time in England. In fact, you had one of the doctors to the King of England who came over and was interested in bringing Wright's cures to England and selling instruments out of England. You had Canadian doctors, but this came to an end when the big suppression came in the 1939, 1940, 41, and then the war was on, and everything had to wait until the end of the war to get started again. Now, the big movement, as I said, as far as the revival, was in the 1980s, and that occurred in Russia. And Russia was not aware of Reich at the time. They were into or developed energy medicine through the work of Tesla, the man who invented alternating current. And they did something very different. They were measuring each organ in the body, and they did something like 25,000 people they tested to get these numbers of what a healthy organ, a rate, a vibratory rate for healthy organs, so that they could treat people by measuring what's your vibratory rate of your liver or your lung, et cetera. And if you were below what was healthy, they would then feed that vibratory oscillatory rate into the organ to heal the person. And by the 1980s, they had clinics throughout Russia that were using this kind of medicine. But they didn't become aware of Reich until late 89, early 90s, when everyone in America became aware of him also. But then they added Reich's methods to their own instruments, and they began to blow up viruses by resonance, the same as the experimental work that was done in America was doing.
This is the first I've heard of calibrating the frequency for a particular organ. That in itself is new to me, but it also implies that if there are frequencies that are in the environment that are harming or they're not resonant to particular organs, they could cause damage, I suppose.
Well, that's a controversial subject. If the person who's curious about this should keep in mind that sometimes in history, a person comes along and they invent something or they discover something, and as a result of that, the whole society changes. It takes a while. If you think of the Wright brothers, they flew that dinky airplane in North Carolina, and now we have supersonic air travel. Nikola Tesla invented alternating current, and electricity before his time was basically non-existent. And now it's essential to everything we do in our lives. So there's no reason to think that people like Dr. Wright and others who are in the same field have taken the first steps to a new medicine that in time people will probably carry around like cell phones and be able to heal themselves of viruses and bacteria through vibration, or actually measure and then uplift particular organs that are having difficulties. It's a visionary description of what is possible, but I know I read about doctors who are researching this very thing right now, and I have no doubt that there are electronics companies out there that are very interested in the idea of having instruments that could be sold to every individual on an individual basis that would maintain their health or elevate it to an optimum level.
You published the Reich Report or the Cancer Cure that worked in 1987. And so you're saying you're hopeful with what you see today in the emerging field of frequency therapy and bioenergetics?
Yeah, there's a great deal of work on bioenergetics where people use computers to measure people's biofields. A biofield is like an aura that surrounds the body, but it can now be measured. And there's a lot of research going on at National Institutes of Health about how the biofield can be looked at, and people can sometimes determine that a disease is coming your way. And by interacting with the biofield, they can prevent the disease from actually occurring. So this is not that strange. It's It may be strange to the public because they don't get a lot of information about it, but in the universities and in people's laboratories, they're certainly doing a lot of work on this. When you have conferences that occur where hundreds of people show up and they've got all their gizmos and they're demonstrating their gizmos and they're selling them or testing them or whatever, you have a real movement in this country that wants to develop an alternative to drug medicine. Jeff, for people who would like to hear Dr. Reif, there is a website called Reif Videos, that's one word, .com, and they can go there and they can hear and watch a video titled Reif in His Own Words, and they can hear him explaining all sorts of things for about an hour with images of not only Dr. Reif, but the viruses and get a taste for the deep scientific world in which Dr. Reif lived and found things that are valuable for all of humanity.
That's fantastic, Barry. Let's go to a clip from that video right now.
As far back as 1920, I conceived the idea and the possibility of when the causative agent of malignancy, so-called cancer, would be discovered and found and proven that it would be caused by a microorganism. Of course, reception that I received that far back from the medical profession and scientists was nil. But I kept at the work, and I succeeded in eventually isolating a virus. First, I began sectioning tissues of every known type of malignancy. I sectioned over 20,000 of those, cut them down with a special microtome to very thin. Some of them were only a micron in thickness. I studied those under the microscope, and I eventually built my first high-powered microscope for the purpose of analyzing and checking those sections. The only result that I obtained over all those years was I succeeded in developing a very excellent technique of tissue preparation. But I never found an organism that I could say was the causative agent of malignancy. I went through with this, and then I developed other instruments of greater amplitude of magnification than the old original number one, which was very lacking in resolution beyond about 8,000 or 9,000 times. It was a lens microscope, and all of the air was excluded from the body and replaced with glycerin. The lenses were homogeneous with glycerin all the way through the whole thing, and the result was that in allowing the rays to separate and not cross in the interference band of reflection, such as they do in the ordinary standard tube of the regular research microscope, we held them apart, we separated them, and then brought them back together and picked them up again at a needle point. But, as I say, the resolution of this instrument beyond about anywhere from 9,000 to 10,000 times dropped off decidedly rapidly. We could go up on some occasions, on some preparations, up to 17,000 times, but we didn't consider the resolution anything out of the ordinary beyond about 8,000 or 9,000 or 10,000 times, depending entirely upon the specimen we were examining. With the results that those tissues gained us absolutely nothing. And as I say, I built other microscopes beyond this one. But that instrument we used up until 1931. With that instrument, Arthur Kendall and I, working jointly in the Pasadena General Hospital, succeeded in isolating what we classify the first filterable form of bacteria ever seen. It was isolated from the Bacillus typhosus from cultures that Dr. Kendall brought from his laboratory at Northwestern University in Chicago. And we succeeded definitely in isolating a filterable form of that bacteria. Now, these filterable forms are very minute in size. The smallest of all is the one from the BX, which we isolate from cancer. We have never made a positive claim that that is the causative agent of cancer. But that is the smallest, and it's less than a 1/20th of a micron in dimension and highly motile. We succeeded in isolating this organism, this BX, using a Kendall media. It's known as Kendall media. It's made of a desiccated pig intestine, dehydrated down where it requires about 10 gallons of the original raw gut when it's desiccated, and run through the extractor and dehydrated to make about 1 pound of the original material. Now that is placed in a tube. We use about 4 grams, and then we use 10 to 20 cc's of a thyroid solution. It's a chemical series of salts. Now that is what Kendall used for the isolation or bringing out this Bacillus typhosus in the filterable state, which is published in the Californian Western Medicine in 1931, our joint report on that. Now, these organisms, again, before we go farther, they cannot be stained with the aniline or acid dye stains that's used in the ordinary technique and method of staining tissue sections or even bacteria. Now, those organisms are so minute and so delicate that they have to be stained with a frequency of light. Now, after we built our first high-powered microscope, we had to build an illuminant unit to be able to see these different types of organisms and different types of tissue also. So we had to build this particular unit. We built a unit which I have a patent on, a special lamp that will produce 2,000 candle power and a needle point a beam where it comes through the condenser. But between this source of illumination and the so-called substage condenser, we have a pair. On the universal microscope, we have 4, but we use a pair of rotating wedge-shaped quartz prisms. They're circular, and they're wedge-shaped. And by rotating those, we bend a beam of light, that's what we term the neutral or core beam of the illuminant unit, at different angles of incidence, so that it strikes the object under examination at different angles of refraction. There we see these particles at a different refractive index, and every one of them is entirely different. For instance, we find that the Bacillus typhosus, in its filterable state, is a beautiful turquoise blue body. We see them swimming through the field. They're highly motile. And incidentally, if the organism, the bacteria, is a motile bacteria, in most instances, the virus will be motile or highly motile, and vice versa. So we see these beautiful turquoise blue bodies swimming through the field. With that, we can differentiate absolute and positively, which we have done. We can analyze the blood of a typhoid suspect, the filtered blood serum, or the urine, as men as 10 and 15 days beyond or before the Weedall retraction will show that that patient has typhoid, which of course speeds up the diagnostic value of the work. So we place a colon bacillus under this monochromatic light, and there we have a reddish-brown organism that is highly motile also. We place the filterable form of the bacillus of tuberculosis there. We have a jade green, and so on. We place the filterable form, or the BX, that's isolated from our carcinoma, and we have a purplish-red one, and so on. We have, from the filterable form of poliomyelitis, we have a coral pink. The value of this particular method and principle is, as stated before, highly valuable in a diagnosis of the case. As we go on with this, it is so important to have a positive diagnosis that is not interfered with by some laboratory faulty technique, staining methods, and whatnot. Now, as we stated before, we'll go back to the point where we contemplated isolating an organism from malignant tissue. The thing is that I positively believed that when the causative agent was found, it would be caused to be found by a microorganism. And not unlikely, an organism that we have with us at all times that is changed by the metabolic shift of the human body itself. That we have proven. I also stated that in one stage it would be not unlikely that it would be found to be in the bloodstream. That was also proven. So as we isolate this organism, we have what we call the BX. It is a very complicated method and technique. The first material that we isolated was from an ulcerated breast mass that I received from the Paradise Valley Hospital in National City. We use and chose an unulcerated breast mass because we'd have less chance of outside contamination. I took those blocks, about 4 millimeters square, and I placed them in my K-media. I incubated them. I had no results. I changed them at different temperatures. I had no results. I was running at that time possibly 400 transfers a day and determining the effect that the argon, neon, and krypton gas using as a bombardment in a loop would have upon the growth of pathogenic bacteria. We wanted to determine if it would stimulate or retard the growth.
That was a clip from rifevideos.com. Barry, is there any advice you'd give to people looking for a Rife machine?
Yeah, be very, very careful. There's lots of rip-off instruments being sold, because once Rife became famous, then everybody that had no scruples would start selling you junk. And it's a tough situation for the person who doesn't know anything. And the only answer is you're going to have to stick your nose into the internet and test various possibilities. I don't recommend any machines. I'm not an engineer. I'm a historian, and I wrote about what happened in the past. So where people go as this develops in the future, I cannot predict, and I don't know which are the best ones. But, as I say, you have conferences, and you have people that support groups and all of that. It's something that people who are curious have got to kind of explore on their own.
There's an article in The Guardian that you referenced titled, "Do Today's Scientific Practices Really Suppress Brilliant Breakthroughs?" There's also a great quote from a letter to The Guardian about this article. Quote, "The more we push back the boundaries of knowledge, the harder it becomes to find something new and earth-shattering. Science progresses by small increments, fed by many tiny cogs in a vast knowledge machine." Why did you include this quote?
Well, that's the problem of modern science and medicine, is that you have an established order filled with lots of people with PhDs or medical degrees, and it's very hard for the outsiders who has legitimate discoveries to break through those walls. It's an insider's group. And the particular article was talking about a bunch of scientists who are all part of an established order that make incremental changes. But there's no room for the outsider who makes the great breakthroughs, whether it's a Tesla or an Einstein or someone like that. But you have to make room for those people. And when you got to have hope that everything is not going to be controlled by the existing establishment, whether it's scientific establishment or a medical establishment. And that's why you need free speech and you need discussion and openness. And if you don't get it because the journals are controlled and the newspapers are censored, then you're in a bad, very bad situation. And healthcare is a big political issue, and it's going to stay one for the next 5 or 6 years because people want choice and they're not getting it. Chiropractors for a long time, back in the 1980s and 90s, were treated by the medical profession as frauds. And it wasn't until the chiropractors sued the AMA, and the AMA was found guilty of antitrust by a federal judge, and they were punished. And as a result of that, the medical profession leaves chiropractors alone. And I believe that we're going to need a separate category for frequency medicine practitioners that is similar to what the chiropractors have. And until we get that, people will not have choice, in their towns. They'll have nothing but drug medicine, and they won't have these options.
Your book, The Rife Report, or Cancer Cures That Worked, can you talk about how this book is doing and how publishers have really not wanted to touch this book?
There's very few published literature on Royal Rife, but there's a great deal of articles you can find on the internet, as I said before. I published, that was the first Rife book, that was 1987. And the only other serious book that has come along since then is Dr. Nina Silver's book, The Rife Handbook. That's kind of pricey, though. It's over $100, but it's very well written, and it's for practitioners. It has all the frequencies that are used for various diseases, but the field is limited. I mean, there is my books, plural, and there is Nina Silver's book, but there isn't much else. The field is not developing through published books. It's really developing through articles and internet exchanges. You have enormous groups that are in contact with each other. I mean, hundreds and thousands of people that are part of different groups. You know, they're all using instruments. They're all exchanging information about what works and what doesn't work. So this is a genuine movement. And someday, it'll find its place in legitimate medicine. I mean, there's a lot of frequency medicine that is already allowed. You'll find it in hospitals. You'll find it in when they start the heart again. That's frequency medicine. It's a form of it. So it's coming in. It's evolution. But it's sad that it couldn't come faster and that it doesn't have the public, the government support that it deserves.
You mentioned having a federal ombudsman to watch over some of the suppression by the AMA. Can you talk about that?
Well, it's more of a scientific. I was referring more to science, not medicine. Medicine is always going to have its local expression, the local doctors, local boards, state boards, all that kind of stuff. I was referring more to the lack of scientific recognition of what Rife accomplished, because he made a major discovery in the field of microbiology, and he changed the entire field, and yet it's not recognized. So if there were such things as a federal ombudsman for science, then you could go to them and say, look, you should look into this, investigate, and provide the public with the truth. And the truth is that the microbiologists that are using the electron microscope are studying dead viruses. And if you went to what Rife discovered, you would have an entirely different microbiology. And everything would be changed. But because everyone's afraid to talk about Rife, you have a whole field of science that is basically not recognized. And that's wrong. And yet, we're stuck with politics, of the scientific politics, where the people who run the show in science are older and established, and they don't take risks, so they don't want to stand up for discussion, open discussion.
And in addition, recently there seemed to have been an attempt to send a chill through the holistic and alternative medicine community in this country, in these unusual deaths of doctors who were working on cancer cures. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm aware of it, but I think it seems extreme to me to say that's occurring. I don't agree that it's occurring. There have been some suspicious deaths, I'll grant, but that a whole field of medicine is being destroyed. That's pretty far out. I'm not there.
Barry, would you mind talking about how you got involved in writing about Royal Rife?
How I got involved with writing. I was drafted. I was living very happily in Washington, D.C., and after Rife died, he had a partner, and his partner called me. He'd seen an article I had written and begged me to write about Royal Rife. And I wanted nothing to do with it because I'm not an engineer and I'm not a microscope guy and I'm not a microbiologist. So I thought the field was beyond my understanding. But he begged me and begged me, and I finally made a deal with him, and he provided tons of documents upon which I wrote a book. That's the long story of it. I didn't want to do it, and I tried to get somebody else to do it because I didn't feel I was qualified. And I really wasn't, not on the technical side of it, but I was qualified as a historian, and I could write the history and in popular language that people would understand. So it came out good, but it's called destiny. I didn't plan this road of life.
What was the turning point to push you to accept doing that work?
Well, I had read an article about Rife that came out in the 1970s. I knew the scientist who had written it. He had a degree in biology from Harvard. He was a pretty good scientist, and he convinced me with the article he wrote that this was a great crime that needed attention, and that it was important that people look at and develop further this entire field. But I just didn't feel I was qualified, as I said, and so I ended up writing a history of it. But I had all the documents, and I could put them in order, and I could explain what they meant. And I could do that fairly well, but I certainly was not an engineer, and I'm not a microbiologist. I don't look through microscopes myself. But I have worked with some very good microscopists, people who are professors of biophysics and things like that. So I learned a lot in the process. You have to be careful when destiny sticks its finger in your face and says, I want you, and you're it. You don't have a lot of choice. Happens to all kinds of people. I mean, people get married and suddenly they're in a whole different life than they thought, or people change jobs, or they get drafted in the army or whatever. Life is like that. And when you find something that says this is your destiny, you should recognize it and go with it.
Is there anything you would want listeners to know about Royal Rife?
Everybody loved him. Everybody who knew him loved him. They all respect him. He was known for his kindness. He was gentle. He held the world speedboat record for decades. He was an outstanding musician. He would play instruments, and the whole street would come down and with tears in their eyes listening to his music. He invented something in World War I for airplanes, and he was honored by all the Allied powers for some kind of stabilizer he built for the early World War I aircraft. He had a Ph.D., an honorary Ph.D. from the University of Heidelberg, one of the outstanding universities in the world. He studied at Johns Hopkins, again, one of the great medical institutions of America. He was a unique human being, but he was terribly brutalized by the AMA, and he was virtually destroyed when they came after him. In the legal trial, they just beat him up unmercifully. And it was a real tragedy. His life's a tragedy. He gave the world a great scientific gift, and he was unique in that, and he suffered enormously because of it. His microscopes opened the way to viewing what never before had been seen. If you think of Galileo with his telescope, Rife with his microscope was the equivalent. That whole world is open and available now to us because of what Rife did. And there are microscopes in Europe that are very similar to Rife's now, and they can do similar things.
Barry Lyons, author of many books, including The Cancer Cure That Worked, 50 Years of Suppression, The Healing of Cancer, Rife's great discovery, why, quote, resonant frequency therapy is kept hidden from public awareness, and Rife's World of Electromedicine. You can find these books on Amazon, and you can also find more information about Barry on barry-lines.com. Barry Lines, you've done heroic work in breaking through the lies and deception and bringing to an international readership the true and factual events surrounding Royal Rife's genius and scientific inventions. Thank you for being on In Other News.
That's great. It's good being here.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.
Поставили.